Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Anand Rathi Wealth Limited Q1 FY24 earnings conference call. This conference call may contain forward-looking statements about the company, which are based on the beliefs, opinions, and expectations of the company as on date of this call. These statements are not the guarantees of future performance and involve risks and uncertainties that are difficult to predict. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on a touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Feroze Azeez, Deputy CEO. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining the earnings call for the quarter ended 30th June 2023. Along with me, I have Mr. Jugal Mantri, the Group CFO, Mr. Rajesh Bhutara, the CFO of the company, Mr. Chetan Shenoy, the Director and Head of Product and Research, Vishal Sanghavi, the Head of Investor Relations, and SGA, which is our investor relations advisors. During the Q1 FY24, our total revenue grew by about 34% year-on-year to an amount of rupees 178 crores, and the PAT also grew by about 34% to about 53 crores. Our strong performance was further fueled by the robust growth in the assets under management, which witnessed 32% year-on-year increase and reached a number of 43,413 crores. This growth was, of course, driven by the cumulative part of every constituent of our team. Our flagship private wealth business, AUM, grew by about 31% year-on-year, which stood at 42,246 crores. Additionally, we continue to expand our client base, adding 395 client families during the quarter. We have now reached 8,700 satisfied client families, out of which 62% are with us for more than 3 years and account for 80% of our AUM. At Anand Rathi Wealth, our core belief has always been centered around offering uncomplicated, standardized, and well-researched wealth solutions to our clients. This philosophy has not only enabled us to consistently achieve the desired risk-adjusted return, but also enhance our client retention capabilities. Our client retention is less than 1% in terms of AUM lost for Q1 FY24, which speaks of value which we add to our clients. In terms of relationship managers, we have successfully added about 37 new relationship managers on a net basis in the last 12 months. Our total RMs as on 30th June 2023 stood at 308. With this brief overview, I will now request Chetan to take us on the digital wealth and the OFA vertical, a brief description of the business. Chetan, over to you.
Our digital wealth vertical is a fintech extension of the company's proposition for the mass affluent segment. It registered a growth in AUM of 43% year-on-year to 1,167 crores, while the number of clients grew by 7% year-on-year to 4,305 clients. OFA business is a strategic extension of capturing wealth management landscape to service-related service retail clients through mutual fund distributors by using our technology platform. As on 30th June 2023, OFA has 5,688 mutual fund distributors associated and has assets under management on the platform of 100,000+ crore. We firmly believe that the wealth management sector holds immense potential, and this motivates us to remain committed to our vision of providing high-quality solutions that fulfill our clients' objectives. Thank you very much, and now I hand it over to our Group CFO, Jugal, to take you all through the financial performance of the company.
Thanks, Chetan and Feroze. Good afternoon, everyone. It's my pleasure to present you all with the key financial numbers. Our consolidated revenue for the quarter ended 30th June 2023 stood at rupees 178 crores, as against rupees 134 crores during the same period last year, registering a growth of 34% YOY. Our profit before tax for the quarter stood at rupees 71 crores, as against rupees 53 crore during the same period last year, registering a growth of 34% YOY. Profit before tax margin stood at 39.7% in Q1 FY24. PAT for the quarter stood at a healthy rupees 53 crores as against rupees 40 crores during the same period last year, registering a growth of 34% YOY. Annualized return on equity for Q1 FY24, which is ROE, stood healthy at 43.2%, and earning per share for Q1 FY24 stood at rupees 12.8 per share. Coming to the private wealth vertical, for Q1 FY24, our flagship private wealth vertical revenue grew by 32% YOY, which stood at rupees 171 crores, while trail revenue grew by 17% year-on-year, which stood at rupees 50 crores. Profit before tax for Q1 FY24 stood at rupees 70 crores, registering a growth of 33% year-on-year, while PBT margin stood at 40.9%. PAT for Q1 FY24 stood at rupees 52 crores, registering a growth of 33% year-on-year, while PAT margin stood at 30.7%. I would like to emphasize that as the Indian economy continues to expand and progress, coupled with a growing number of millionaires and billionaires in the country, we believe there will be an immense opportunity for professional wealth solution provider in the country, and we at Anand Rathi are poised to grab this opportunity. With this, we will now open the floor for question and answer. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Our first question is from the line of Lalit Deo from Equirus Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi sir. Good afternoon. Congratulations on a good setup now. So like, so first question would be on the, so on the revenue side, like we have seen a sharp increase in the MLD revenues. So could you just give us the primary issuance and the secondary issuance that we have done during the quarter, as well as like how much is like from the third party is as well?
Jugalji, can you give
us the Thanks, Lalit. See, the gross issuance of the MLD for the Q1 was 1,396 crore rupees. Out of that, about 143 crore rupees was from third parties. But what is important to note here is that the net issuance, see that as of now, we are at a situation every year because of the past issuances in MLD. Our outstanding, our MLD portfolio, that stands at a healthy 12,000 crore rupees. And as you know that the average tenure of the MLD, which is about 4 years, what we will see is that say 3,000 to 4,000 crore rupees will be getting redeemed along with the accrual on those MLDs. And as we know that about 70 to 80% of the same gets redeployed. So now this will become a regular phenomena that there will be gross issuances which will be around 1000 to in between 1000 to 1500 crore rupees every quarter. But if you look at the net issuance, that was still 358 crore rupees only, which is compared with 239 crore rupees in Q1 FY23. And as far as concerned with the MLD breakup, as I said, that 10% of the gross issuance is going to the external agencies. But if I compare with the net issuances, that will be like 143 goes to the external, and the remaining of 358 minus 143. So that is about 215 will be to our sister concern.
Sure, sir. Like, this 1,400 crores is primary issuance or like it includes both primary as well as secondary?
It's the primary issuance.
Like, what will be the secondary issuance during the quarter?
See, secondary issuance is not issuance. Secondary is basically there is a trading volume. Okay?
Yes.
That was like about 254 crore rupees, which was the secondary transaction, which compared with the 359 crore rupees in Q1 FY 2023.
Sure, sir. Like, just wanted to ask one more question. Like, last quarter we did about like 1,000 crores of like primary issuance, and then there was this budget announcement. Like, now we have seen a sharp jump during this quarter, like about 40% increase. Like, is it like a one-time impact or like do you see a structural change in the investors where like investors are coming from the listed MLD space to the unlisted MLD space?
Lalit, if you recall, I have, like while answering the question, I said that we have got an AUM of about 12,000 crore rupees in structured product. Okay? Say about 3,000 crore rupees of the face value, along with the accrual component, which varies from 40%-60%, that gets redeemed, that is going to be redeemed every year. Whatever redemption which is taking place, even without doing any extra, putting any extra efforts, about 80% of the money that flows back into the structured product. Okay? This sort of issuance which has happened in the Q1, that is more or less guaranteed. In fact, it is marginally, it will go up. Reason being that the AUM, which is growing because of the market impact and the accrual, in fact, the redemption as well as the renovation of these maturities in terms of amount, it will marginally go up. But in terms of proportion to the overall AUM, it will slightly fall.
Sure, sir. Like, one more question was like, so during the quarter we have seen like, the revenue increase was great, good. Similar to that, like employee expenses which are mostly linked to revenues have also increased. Like, any reason why we have seen a sharp increase in other, in our other operating expenses also?
Let me take that.
See, other operating expenses are like directly there are two things. One thing is that in Q1 FY 2023, there was definitely the COVID impact. All the traveling conveyances, those were restricted. But now gradually in FY 2022, 2023, you might have seen that there is an increase in traveling, business promotion, networking, as well as on the conveyance expenses. These are directly commensurate with the increased activity and physical movement on the ground, and that is why you have seen that the non-operating expenses have moved up.
Sure. Thank you, sir. I'll come back in the future.
Okay. Okay. Thanks, Lalit.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Pallavi Deshpande from Sameeksha Capital. Please go ahead.
Sir, on the regulatory side, the changes that, you know, on the total expense side that we are expected to see, what would be the steps you would be taking here and, you know, what would be the kind of impact you expect on the commission side?
Pallavi, I think in the last earnings call also we discussed this. Firstly, as you would be aware, Anand Rathi Wealth Limited has not used any of the generosities on the commission front, be it the B30, be it the NFO or liberalness because of the AUM not getting established. Since the smaller schemes giving you more commission, like the 11 scheme model portfolio we had at an average assets of 13,000-15,000 crores, was the average assets under management for the 11 schemes. I very well knew, as a company that if I take 11 schemes with 7,000 crores of average AUM, then I'll get 0.30 more. Point one I'm making is the impact of any client-centric circular would have minimal effects on somebody who's already been client-centric, and you would be very happy to know that Anand Rathi Wealth, let alone selling any product which is an NFO for the last 11 years, we've not even approved one of them.
That's point one. So as far as our understanding goes, the regulatory circular will go through huge amendments in the next form and fashion, if you heard the regulator say that. So the impact of 3-4% of revenue, which I was speaking about the last time around, doesn't seem to exist anymore.
Right. And so what would be the average, you mentioned about the average AUM size being 13 to 15K, but we've introduced some more new schemes, I understand. So what would be the average AUM size now?
Yeah, it should be about 11,000-12,000.
Okay.
See, we are always going to be running the business as per client's objective. If a 500 crore scheme, if at all, to magnify the example, helps me meet my client objective, it will be a part. If a 50,000 crore scheme helps me meet my client objective, it will be. Right? So revenues are never going to take precedence over our actions, irrespective of whatever pressures we may ever have.
And so my second question would be on the net inflows, if we could have the breakup between what would have come from the existing clients and what would have been from the new clients.
We look at net flows, not, as well you may have this number. So net flows, we focus on, if you look at it from a perspective of new clients, I would say about 30% comes from the new clients, 70% comes from existing clients. We as a wealth outfit have this clear display of confidence in action by not forcing a client to start big with us. In spite of our segment, which is very dear to us, which is $1 million plus, we don't force the client to start with $500,000. We say if you have 50 lakhs, start with us, and merit will help us penetrate into your wallet. So the share of new money from clients when they begin is not going to be big, because I don't put pressure on them saying that 5 crore se chalu karo. Kyun? Aap 50 lakh se chalu karo. Agar main lip service nahi kar raha hun, toh zahir si baat hai, it's obvious that you will give me the money which I deserve. So that's why a 70-30 ratio. But the clients who come in every single month are my potential clients, which is $1 million plus kind of balance sheets other than the homes they live in. So that's where comes the snowballing effect of this business after it reaches an inflection point. So these 8,700 families are filtered on the basis of their segment. And if there is some short-term investor or an investor who doesn't fit the bill in terms of size, we don't even onboard them.
Right, sir. Thank you so much. I'll come back in the queue.
Thank you, Pallavi, for your question.
Thank you. A reminder to all participants, you may press star and one to ask a question. Our next question is from the line of Bhavin Pandey from Athena Investments. Please go ahead.
Hey, congratulations on wonderful set of numbers. I hope I'm audible.
Yes, Bhavin, you are.
Sure. I just wanted to understand how are we sort of, trying to push this business from sales perspective, and how many bankers would we be, looking to add every year over the period of next 5 years?
See, very valid and a good question, sir. Firstly, what we look at is client RM addition is one of the verticals which people can extrapolate on an Excel sheet reasonably easily by hiring and putting in some capital behind that strategy. So we expand our RM fraternity on the confidence of the preparedness of the leadership bandwidth. Okay, all my 100 crore plus RMs are qualified leader potential. So to answer your pointed question, today we have 135-140 RMs who have the capacity to mentor 3 to 4 people. So that's the leadership capacity given. So that means 140 people mentoring 3 to 4, which is a span of control, implies close to about 500 relationship managers in the form of, in the constraint of leadership. So leadership is no more a constraint any further. Second is how many people have a cultural fit into the organization of client centricity. So that's why we internally currently train 296 apprentices who are called account managers who get promoted. So these are the two important fuels to my RM force. So having said which, where could we head? We are going to always expand in a calibrated fashion, because we have to make sure that the brand promise of uncomplicated and client centricity is actually delivered. So 308, I wouldn't be surprised it gets to those 500 RM kind of numbers over the next couple of years or 3 years to be more realistic.
Okay. And you know, like the given phenomenal number of families we have, so our emphasis would be more on increasing wallet share of existing customers, as you mentioned that you have some clients charge with a figure of 5 million INR and wants to go up to let's say 50 million INR, or would be a balanced approach between adding more families and increasing the wallet share?
See, all the four growth engines have immense mutually exclusive potential to contribute to our long-term, very, very dear to heart objective of 20-25% PRAT growth for years and decades to come. So having said which, I don't think we are at some phenomenal numbers in terms of client families. We may be happy at 8,700, but we still, any report will tell you there are 8 lakh to 10 lakh HNI families. So we're just 1%. So I think we are scratching the surface, so we don't pat ourselves too much on the back in terms of cover the HNI fraternity currently. But I'm sure there's an exponential increase potential possible. So if I have 308 private relationship managers, who are at least 80% of them are not at full capacity, I'm not very pleased if I don't in the next 1 year, 1.5 years acquire 200 families on a net basis, because it's 0.6 per relationship manager is our internal target. So to answer your pointed question, we are nowhere close to having quenched our thirst in terms of new client acquisition, because the universe is so large and every 8,500 families have at least 5-10 HNI friends who deserve to be our clients and we deserve to be their distributors. And as we build credibility with these 8,700, and credibility doesn't come without time. Time is one very, very important build credibility builder, be it as a listed company, be it as an advisor or a distributor. The good part is we have 80%, 70%, 67%, 70% of our clients having finished 3 years. That means they would have seen us for 3 years. So that's a very important mutually exclusive variable, and our aspiration is to get to 200 net client families added per month, month on month in the near future. Coming to the net mobilization from the wallet share penetration, I think that any time a client finishes 3 years and we have delivered him a risk-adjusted return of 12-13% on a beta of 0.5 on Nifty, we go have this conversation with him. Sir, I didn't force you to start with 5 crores, but you have 5 crores. You are at 2. I have done my bit. Can you please be generous to do your bit? And those conversations are very positive conversations because you've already shown him 3 years of risk-adjusted return, which is best in class.
Okay.
Does that answer, sir?
Yeah, definitely. Perfect. Thank you so much and all the best for quarters and years ahead. I'll just get back in the
support.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, a reminder to all participants that you may press star and one to ask a question. Our next question is from the line of Naisar Parikh from Native Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking the question. A couple of questions. The first one is on the structured products in MLD. You know, that is like 29% of AUMs. Out of that, what percentage is to our sister entity? And, you know, so to that extent, does that pose any risk or any of that sort, just in terms of it being to sister entity?
Yes, Mr. Parikh, right, sir?
Yes.
Mr. Parikh, the optical, of course, a reasonable portion of that is by a sister entity. Whatever be the ratios, I'm sure Jugalji will be very equipped to answer its second decimal in terms of proportions. The risk which you see optically itself is the risk mitigant. Okay, so when I don't have another entity which I'm very comfortable with, even if there's a gun on my head, I'm not going to distribute that product for the revenue. So we were the first few to eliminate two structure product issuers which were a part of our recommendation in 2016, 17, 18, much before they ran into trouble. And because of our credit risk evaluation team, where they see very mathematically which ones are at risk, we were able to pull the plug much, much before. Several portfolios were able to sell their bonds as well. So to answer your pointed question, A large portion of that is in the sister concern. Of course, we have Nuvama because we were comfortable after the ownership change. That's another offering which we have. But the larger portion is in the sister concern. And the pricings which we get from Nuvama are better than the sister concern. Okay, the same product gives me more revenues if issued by Nuvama. And that's the great part to put evidence to the transfer pricing or arm's length pricing, which I'm sure some of you may be wondering if that's true.
I understand my question. If I could follow up, right, when customers, you know, 30% of the AUM, that is significant. So are customers asking you to maybe diversify more? Is this more of a pull thing or is this a push thing when, you know, you allocate 30% to MLD?
I can tell you, I've met a few thousand clients because all of us are relationship managers first. So I manage about 8-9 clients myself. My biggest trouble is, he says, why not 40%? Okay, because there is understanding of what we do. So we do only things which we really, really, really understand second decimal. To answer your question, is it a push or a pull? It's push for the client for it to not, why is it not 40%? That's the current status. And that's how it has been for the first 4 years, of course, when we started issuance in December 2012. Now we have credibility in terms of having matured. 1,300 ISINs have matured and 15.3% is the IRR of those 1,300 ISINs with a standard deviation of 4.3% on the outcome. That means a 3 sigma event also keeps them in the positive on a 3 to 5 year basis. Okay, so after having built that kind of credibility with 1,500 still to mature and 1,300 having matured, because every Tuesday we have a trade of the same product 1,000th time. So we have 2-3 products. We don't innovate till the client needs it. We don't innovate just to make sure that we have interesting conversations with clients. So it's very surprising to other friends and in the industry, saying that how are you able to sell the same product 1,000 times and keep the interest alive? That's because it's, our jobs are not to make wealth management interesting. Our job is to make the wealth.
Got it. And sorry, last question on this, but the sister entity that you have is basically a NBFC, right? It is into lending, right? If I'm understanding it correctly.
Correct. It is a mix of, and I'm sure if you download the balance sheet, it will give you a second decimal allocation. It's lending, not such aggressive lending, and a lot of money is in debt instruments to make sure that the money is safe.
And the second part of the question was on digital, right? How are we using digital, and is digital, you know, at all, do you think, in the wealth management space, a direct digital or a digital app can be a significant channel, and how are we using digital to, you know, kind of tap into some of the young professional salaried people who might reach or are reaching the $1 million milestone?
See, if you look at India, of course, digital wealth is household savings. We have just done a study. It's 670 lakh crores. Of course, please read this with some degree of 10-15% tolerance, because we have taken RBI data and all that data to see that we have 670 lakh household saving. 10 years back, it was only 270 lakhs. So Indians are saving phenomenally, but they're investing wrongly. We also computed India's return for the last 10 years. Of course, back of the envelope, it is sub 7%. So having said which, of course, if the savings rates are so good, the young professionals will have more money than they can actually spend. So digitally delivering that is the only way to give ethical advice to those guys, because you can't afford to make an RM reach there and still not sell him an insurance policy. Because if I have a human interaction, then my revenues can't be 1%. If my revenue is 1% on 10 lakhs, it's 10,000 rupees. I'm sure that's a 15-day salary of my client, a client's driver. So I can't do ethical advice without a digital reach. So we are at the stage of experimenting. Today there is proof of concept. There is no cash burn. A value unlocking will take its time. So, but do we see this as a huge potential and a peripheral important business? Yes. and it also helps us keep our ears and eyes on the ground on the paradigm shift which technology brings about every couple of years. Having said which, it's a chicken and egg story. The mass affluent or the affluent does not get great distribution till he is HNI, and if he gets great distribution, he becomes an HNI. So it's a chicken and egg story we are trying to solve. So at this stage, we don't hatch our eggs before that. So we think that it has a huge potential of value unlocking for our business, and proof of concept and no cash burn is evidence to that.
Got it. Thank you so much. Thank you. And all the best.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, a reminder to all participants, you may press star and one to ask a question. I repeat, ladies and gentlemen, you may press star and one to ask a question. Our next question is from the line of Harsh Kotari from Kotari Investments. Please go ahead.
Hi, actually my question is on, the MF equity and debt revenue and the employee cost, slide number 29. So when we see those numbers, as a company, it's the third largest distributor of mutual funds. But if I look at the cost of distributing mutual funds and the employee cost, the employee cost exceeds the revenue from MF distribution. So do you intend to make ultimately MF at a standalone level as a business profitable, including if there was some regulatory risk pertaining to the structured products?
Hello, Mr. Harsh, right? If I got
yes.
Your name right?
Yes.
See, it is not, it's apples and oranges if you compare the cost and the revenue.
Correct.
Why I'll tell you so? Because the cost have a provision of the bonus or the remuneration of the structure product sale as well. So if you say that the RM does not do structure product sale, what would his bonuses be? My provision will come down. So if I was just in the business of mutual fund distribution, would I still be making profit? The answer is a big yes. Because you're seeing the cost as a proportion of mutual fund revenues, which is on a Sunday I make 58, 60 lakhs, which is my trail revenue. Even when there's Independence Day, I'm going to get my 60 lakhs, 58, 60 lakhs, which is my trail. I'm just giving you mota-moti numbers. But my cost has the cost as a proportion of a bonus or the share of the RM for the structure product business as well. Did I articulate it well enough?
Yes. Yes. And do you see yourself moving to the RIA model going forward?
We are very clear from day one. 2013 is when RIA came into existence. RIA is, to our mind, not practically possible in India. That's our take, because all products, wealth management portfolios do not just have mutual funds. They have private equity. They have AI funds. They have insurance policies. None of them have a direct several of them don't have the direct option. So if I have to go RIA, I have to say to the client that only mutual funds I will give advice or distribution on. So RIA kaise kare? Koi, jab agar private equity mein direct option nahi hai. So I'm going to earn from that client, that supplier, matlab the manufacturer. Right? So we are not in the business of RIA. We have stuck to distribution. There have been 5 changes in my competitors' business models over the last 10 years. We have not had any change. Why don't we have this change? Because we look at what is the regulatory need. We don't look at the print. We look at the essence of the regulator. Essence of the regulator in 2017, when they removed, or 2018, they removed upfront commission. We did that in February 2016. We wrote to all our AMC partners saying that we don't want upfront, because it was writing on the wall that it is 1 year, 2 year, 3 year. 3 year later, the regulator will tell you this. Because if you look at the essence of what they want from a regulatory standpoint, regulatory changes will help you. Like the MLD taxation change helped us. Why? Because we already knew into June 2016, 2022, we released a paper saying that this MLD taxation of listed is no motivation for somebody to buy. Don't buy it, it will change in the next few budgets. We gave that in writing because it was very clear. So point I'm trying to make is, our regulatory strategy is not to look at what comes as a circular. Read between the lines of what does the regulator want. Regulator does not want mis-selling. So no NFOs. It does not want people to change their addresses and take a B30 commission, which some of them would have done. So that's our strategy, regulatory strategy. Regulator will always give us a push on the positive side because, hand on heart, I also want to be as client-centric or little more client-centric than the regulator wants me to be.
And the product, these MLDs remain tax-free or they, I mean, not tax-free, but they are still taxed at 10%, the new issuances, or they are now taxed at income slabs?
Firstly, MLD didn't have a clear definition. Now, whatever products we are issuing are not qualified to be called MLDs because MLDs are debt securities. Debt securities need to be capital protected.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it was reiterated in the latest media interaction of the regulator. Debt securities have to be capital protected. Fortunately, for our foresight, not even one out of 2,700 products was a capital protected listed rated instrument.
Okay.
Right? So if you're not capital protected, we could have used the word MLD, but now we can't use the word MLD. So we are not in the distribution of MLD whatsoever. Now that there is a definition to MLD, which is two conditions. It needs to be a debt security. It needs to have market linkage. Debt securities definition in four different circulars, SEBI has very categorically said it. The latest being 2021, August 13th circular, which says very clearly that if you don't have principal promised in full at maturity, you are not a debt security. So I'm not into MLD distribution. With this new definition, I've never been. Nuvama, which is another entity we procure structure products from, has a rated paper, which is MLD, but we have not procured one from our other company supplier as well.
Thank you so much for the clarity on this. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. A reminder to all participants, you may press star and one to ask a question. Our next question is from the line of Pallavi Deshpande from Samiksha Capital. Please go ahead.
Right, sir. Thank you for taking my question. So just going back to the question earlier, you know, what we were discussing on the regulator rethinking this expense ratio. So just, I think you mentioned that, you know, with the changed one would see a bigger, I mean, we don't see any impact at all when the changes come through with the new regulation. Just wanted your thoughts, you know, how do you see toning down by 50%, or you know, how do you see it playing out?
So, if you look at it, our trail commissions of a most active mutual fund is about 1.1. or 1.15 post GST. Okay, the circular had 7 points. In fact, I had done a call way back in February with a few analysts, and I'm sure some of you would have got an invite to take you through all these 6-7 points. The regulator now understands that India's saving account and current account balances, don't hold me to this statement, but yeah, are greater than the equity mutual fund AUM of 21 lakh crore. So if 670 lakh crore is the household saving and equity mutual fund is 21 lakh crore, which is close to 4% or little over that or little somewhere thereabouts or 3% to 4%, we have a long, long way to go in terms of mutual funds getting its space in one's portfolio to the extent of 20, 30, 40%. So I don't think the regulator wants to squeeze it below 1%. Because there is also an alternative of direct to a client where he can save that 50, 70 paisa by bypassing the distributor. So I don't think 1% is at a challenge. If I used all the generosities available and brought my trail commissions to 1.4, 1.5, if I have not got something, what can be taken away? That's why a B30 has not had any impact on me. NFO also paying on a certain way is also not impacting me because I didn't do anything. I didn't do small schemes for the reason of commission. So if you look at those 7 points and read that first discussion paper, which came in October, November to the industry and the latest circular, which was given as a draft paper. Now, of course, that has been deferred for the draft paper. I personally believe from what I have read between the lines, the impact is negligible. even if you look at how this business will run, as a professional, we can only assure you that we will apply full might to handle adversities. As a professional, we can never tell you there will be no adversities. But you have to judge for yourself that the last 10 adversities, last 5 adversities, how has the company dealt with them? In a positive fashion, with an open mind and using all the intellect and energy, or with a negative mind saying to aftermarket. Right? So I will tell you that I can only assure you as a professional representing the rest of the group, of course, not I as an Firoz, that we will do our professional best to handle adversities. Adversities will come. The quantums of adversities we have seen in the past have proved that we know how to handle adversities to a certain extent. And we'll still do our professional best. Does that answer, madam?
Yes, sir. That was very helpful. Just a nice refresher. Thank you so much.
Thank you, madam.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Sudeep Dukar, who is an investor. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for giving me the opportunity. Actually, I'm relatively new to the business, so I have a couple of questions. The first is that could you please explain the reason as in why our average yields are going up? And a connected question to it is that if I understand correctly, MLDs have a higher yield as compared to mutual funds. But in the past, we've had this strategy that going forward, the proportion of mutual funds will be increasing. So some idea as to what are the yields on these two products and how are the yields going up? Thank you.
Thank you, Sudeep sir. I'll answer these. And if I miss out any of your points, please highlight again. Because you have had very interesting questions. There is something called perception. There is something called reality. So let me put some numbers on the table. Yield as a word has to always be per annum. Right? So post facto, when we looked at our 1300 maturities, on a like-to-like basis of computation between mutual fund and the structure product, my yield was 3 paisa more per annum for the structure product issue. So in the order of magnitude, both these products give me the same yield. Do I account it sooner or later is an accounting issue for the energy of my RM. My RM needs enthusiasm to work every day. So if I go a full trail model, my RM's energy drops, which drops my revenue. So to answer your pointed question, Sudeep sir, the yields in the order of magnitude, yields are computed on market value per annum in a mutual fund. If I do the same method of computation, if as an RM Firoz allocated 100 rupees of his client in mutual fund, 100 rupees in a structure product, and at maturity computed how much did I earn more as a Firoz for his revenue under his belt, you would see hardly any difference. So 1300 products matured have had in the order of magnitude equal yield to mutual fund. That's point one. Point two is that going forward, these proportions will not change my revenue mix because the proportion changes are bottom up. If the client has a 14% strategy need, we have a model portfolio which is 14%, 13%, 12%, 11%. We try and fit all our clients into these four. Even if they like the uniqueness, we tell them, char hai sir, we can't have 8,700 best portfolios. That's an oxymoron. You can't have 8,700 best portfolios. You tell me the risk return objective, I will make one portfolio statistically tested enough, back tested, front tested using a simulator like Monte Carlo and give him one portfolio. So to answer your point and question, the yields in the order of magnitude are identical, if not, and 1300 products is a reasonable sample set out of the 2700 statistically. 30 products itself is called a significant sample and 1300 is significantly more than that. Does it answer, Sudeep sir, or I missed out answering?
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. That was very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. That was the last question of our question and answer session. I would now like to hand the conference over to the management for closing comments.
Thank you all for joining the call. We hope we have addressed all your queries. If any further information is required, please feel free to reach out to our CFO, Mr. Rajesh Bhutra, Investor Relations Head, Vishalji Sanghvi, our Investor Relations Advisor, which is SGA. And we will try answering all your questions to our best ability. And thank you to supporters, as shareholders, whoever are. Thank you. Have a wonderful week. Thank you, Jugalji.
Thank you. Thanks, Firozbhai. Thanks, Chetan.
Thank
and
you.
Thanks, Jaiko. Bye.
Thank you. On behalf of Anand Rathi Wealth Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.